The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader. Want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Thursday, 5th day of July, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow down 21 points, S&P down 4, the composite up 5, gold off by $13. All in all, a fairly quiet day. Hope you had a great 4th of July. Hope you spent some good quality time with your family. And maybe you got to go out and see some fireworks last night. Perhaps where you were, they last for, 15 minutes, 30 minutes. If you live in a major metropolitan area like Phoenix, there's fireworks displays all over the valley. From the right vantage point, you can see any number of them. We were very close to some on Camelback Mountain last night, but they also had them downtown. Now, it would be San Diego where they had the worst fireworks in history, or the best, depending upon how you look at it. There was a technical malfunction that caused all of their pyrotechnics to go off at the same time. The annual Big Bay Boom Extravaganza began and ended in spectacular fashion when an inadvertent signal set off the explosions about 5 minutes early and caused the entire 18-minute show to take place in about 15 seconds. Now, there was a big bang. Confused spectators waited around for what they thought was going to be the rest of the show, but were sent home and told the show that was supposed to have been choreographed in music was canceled. Some fans were disappointed, but others say it was the best ever. It's got to be a pretty spectacular 18, and there's some videos out on YouTube. It's got to be pretty spectacular to see 18 minutes of fireworks go off in 15 seconds. Speaking of big booms or big bangs, CERN scientists are pretty sure they found the Higgs boson, or boson, depends on where you hail from. Now, you may or may not know what that is. It's referred to as the God particle. And if they really have discovered it, actually some scientists will be bummed out because it just means that everything they ever thought is now true, and so the hunt is over. They still don't have definitive, they're like really, really, really pretty sure that they found it. Now, Michael, you're a man of science. Good afternoon. Are you familiar with Higgs boson?
I am not, actually. I am not. It's computer science.
It's physics. It has to do with physics.
Yeah.
And I'll be the first to tell you that, although I've heard of it, I really did try to read some of the articles over the holiday that talked about it, but whether they found it or not, it's not going to change quality of life as we know it, although in the world of science it's a really big deal. And our final little bit of news today, the Pope is broke. True story. The Vatican has a $19 million deficit. Even with a $50 million gift from the Vatican Bank this year, the Vatican has registered one of its worst deficits in years, plunging back into the red with a 15 million euro or $19 million deficit for 2011. Which adds, according to the Associated Press, which adds that the Vatican blamed the deficit on high personnel and communication costs and adverse market conditions. Those costs, the AP adds, were enough to outweigh a hefty $50 million euro donation from the financially murky Vatican Bank. I don't know what that means. I'm just reading it. The financially murky Vatican Bank and increased donations. So, Vatican City, I just watched on the Discovery Channel not too long ago a documentary courtesy of Netflix. By the way, Americans spent 1 billion hours streaming Netflix in the month of June. Highest number yet. Cable companies are freaked out. And a large portion of that was streamed here in our household across multiple devices. It's just a really good bargain for $7.95 a month. If you have not tapped into Netflix yet, maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
No, I have Netflix, but let me ask you this. When, you know, I'm not really all that familiar with it, but when I go to look for a movie, it shows me 75 movies. I mean, it's got a lot more than that. But how do you access it? You have to actually type in the name, right? You have to do a search for the name.
Where are you looking for the movies at?
You know, just by the default interface that comes up.
On your TV?
Yeah, on the TV.
Okay. there's a couple things you can do is you can search by name, or you log into your Netflix account on your computer, and you go through there, and you can search by category, by genre, by all kind, and that's really the best way to do it and find anything that is of interest to you, and then you add that to your instant queue.
Ah, that's probably what it is. Probably
go to your desktop computer, your laptop. Just go to your Netflix account, find a whole bunch of stuff that you and your family will find of interest, and just click the little button under that says Add to Instant Queue. And then the next time you fire it up on your TV, it'll be right there.
That's it. That must be what it is. Okay.
That does seem like a bit of a cumbersome workaround, but because they have such a large volume of movies, it would be difficult to display them all at once. And I don't know what kind of a remote you have, but you probably don't have a full QWERTY keyboard in front of your TV, do you?
No.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where you got to tap things in with the remote or something.
Yeah, we do it through the Wii. And so, you just have to... The keyboard that comes with it, or not with it, that's, with the Wii Remote, you just got to go through and search. Type in one letter at a time.
Go to your desktop or laptop computer, and you'll get a whole different vision on it, and you just load it up with stuff. And then over time, it starts telling you stuff that it thinks you'll like. Those things will show up on your TV, too. It'll say, because you watch a particular thing, it'll go... And sometimes it goes other shows, like if you watch, Law and Order, it will come up with its own little category. Other shows like Law and Order, and there'll be a few crime shows in a row, and then all of a sudden there's like Lassie. Okay, so that's, I don't know what their algorithm is that they use to define what you'll like, and but anyway.
All right,
the market's in front of us, guys. S&P 500 E mini futures. And one of the things that's really interesting with the Netflix is when you come across a television program that you didn't watch when it was popular. We're watching one now called Prison Break. I think had like 86 episodes, or don't remember the exact number, but I think it stretched over two or three or more, four or five seasons. It was very popular when it was on TV. I never watched it on TV, but we've been watching it now for the past week or so, and it's a different experience when you have to wait week to week to catch the next episode. And then after so many weeks, you got to wait until the next season. And so you don't always remember everything that happened last week. And you certainly, when the new season starts, you don't remember everything that happened last season. But when you're able to watch an entire program over the course of a week or a couple weeks or whatever it takes, it creates a little bit of a different experience. And we found quite a few shows... American shows as well as British television shows. The British comedy shows, you just forget that because their sense of humor is just completely different than ours. Half the time I sit there going, I don't get it. Why was that funny? And I'm sure our humor is probably as odd to them. But their, regular programming, their crime dramas and their murder mysteries, there's lots of those. And we found some really good programs, like Survivor, these people who are left behind after some kind of a biological thing run amok, and there's only a few people left on planet Earth. Bruce asks, is anyone familiar with the Roku device? Yes, Bruce, we do have a Roku. Got the Roku upstairs, got the Apple TV downstairs. Oh, and by the way, you can stream it on your iPad, too. You just have to download the app, the Netflix app. And it streams really well on the iPad. But yes, Bruce, the Roku, we bought that at Walmart. The Apple TV, which sounds like a TV, but it's not. It looks like a little hockey puck that you just hook up to your TV via an HDMI cable, and it just works. Same thing with Roku. That's at Walmart. There's a couple different models. I think the one we bought was like maybe $49 or $59. And I brought it home, and I plugged it into the HDMI port, and it just worked. There was no complicated setups. Remember back in the day, like, I mean, if you wanted to go out and buy a new printer, you were going to spend at least a half a day installing drivers and trying to find the right drivers. Remember all that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Windows did not make it easy.
I mean, oh, you had to have this driver and that driver and the other thing, and now stuff just works. Plug and play, they call it. So when you plug in your Roku device, Bruce, if you get one, the only thing you'll have to do is it will immediately attempt to connect to your Wi-Fi in your home, unless you don't get the Wi-Fi version. And that's something you have to watch out for when you buy these internet-connected devices. Make sure on the box that it says Wi-Fi. Unless you don't want Wi-Fi, maybe you want to run a Cat 5 cable because you're in the same room as your internet connection and you want maybe a little stouter connection. But if you want to go across the house, you don't want Cat 5 running all over the house. You definitely want to use your Wi-Fi. So make sure that the box says that you're buying the Wi-Fi version and not the Ethernet version. Once you plug it in, it'll attempt to connect to your Wi-Fi, and then it'll realize that it needs the security key or password, depending upon what type of encryption you have running on your Wi-Fi. You use the cheesy little remote, a bit cumbersome, but you work your way through, you put your password in, you only have to do that one time, and it just works. Then you go to Netflix, and of course, first time at Netflix, you got to put in your username, your password, and then it just works. And you can be watching a show. They show this with DirecTV. They have commercials like this is a really big deal, and it kind of is, but you can be watching TV in one room on Netflix via Roku or Apple TV and go to the other room and pick up where you left off. So, now with Roku, you have access to 400 channels. Some are free. Some you have to pay for. Some are movie channels that have commercials. So you get like 15 minutes of the movie, then you get like a 30-second commercial, and then you get some more. So, I mean, the choices are just endless. So these devices, are they good or bad? I mean, you could literally spend the rest of your life just watching whatever's on that box and never have to leave your house. And as I'm watching headlines stream across, Netflix has plunged 73% over the past year. That's hard to fathom. They provide so much for so little. Maybe that's why the stock's down. But isn't that why Walmart has done so well? Because they provide so much for so little. So, I don't know. Yeah, their stock's 73% off its all-time high. Maybe it just got overvalued and overpriced at some point.
Well, they did have that little hiccup where they...
Where they tried to split it up between the... and they admitted that was a mistake. But, you know, I don't understand why anybody ever got upset over that, because unless you wanted to do both, unless you wanted to stream and get DVDs in the mail, which, quite frankly, makes no sense, unless you wanted to do that, the service ended up costing you less.
Right.
We used to pay $9.95 a month. Now it's $7.95 a month for unlimited streaming. All right, this morning we had a high up here. This was pre-market. We had a ton of economic news out today. And I mean a ton. Let me see, there was a question. Bruce said, yeah, Bruce, it's worth the money. And it's easy to hook up. And the remote is the user interface, right? And as you go through those 400 channels, some of them will require you to go to your computer and create an account with that particular company or channel. And again, some are free, some are not. And you kind of have to wade through there to figure out. You can also get YouTube and Pandora and a bunch of different stuff. I mean, the list is endless. Okay, so on the pre-market news, we ran up here to the 1375 weekly trading zone. We have a zone at 7576. Then we came hard off the news all the way back down to 61. And we closed the hour right at the weekly trading zone, 1360. We opened the hour at 1360. We made a run, and we got up to 65.75. And we've got a little double top right there on the hourly chart. And I am looking for lower prices here. I'm looking for a break below the zone and here. And real quick, for those of you that were in the live trading room this morning, this trade we attempted to take, once we got the bullish cross, we were interested in taking it maybe up to the high of the day, which at that time was 65. But it just kept drifting higher with no real oomph of any kind. It just kept drifting. And by the time we got here, after this little double and then triple top on the 10,000 contract chart, we said we were not really interested in taking that trade. Now, if you had have taken the trade, I'll let Michael talk about that when we go into the recap, but just for anyone that was in the trading room this morning, I was looking at this, and I was looking at how long this had been overcooked, and I was waiting for it to do this. And this. So that was part of my reasoning for not being very interested at this point. Back here, a little more interested, but by the time we got here, just not so much. So with that, Michael, I've rambled on and on for 25 minutes.
25 minutes.
Good Lord. Well,
it's all good.
All right, take it away.
All right, I'll take it. All right, everyone should be looking at my charts at the moment. All right, here we go. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, July 5th, 2012. Let me give you the results. To start with here. Hang on. Here it is. That's the crude. We got 20 ticks profit in the crude. We have a crude trade right now, as a matter of fact. An opportunity to short on a down close right here. We didn't take any YM trades this morning. We took two ES trades. We're minus five ticks on the ES. We took a bunch of NQ trades. I ended up break even on the NQ. But I was down at the close of the morning session. I was down one trade, but I got it back right over here a few minutes ago. All right. Let's start with the crude. All right, the crude, if we get a down close on this bar right here, with this divergence, this bearish divergence, you would look to go short if you got a down close. You see, the way the setup works is you look for the bearish cross of the MA1 down below the BBC, then price to come back up and test the BBC, and then give you a down close in the direction of the cycle portion of the slingshot down here. You want to see this bearish divergence. Now, if we get an up close on this bar, then the trade's not going to happen. All right, if we get a down close on this bar, right there would be a spot to short. All right, 87.27, right in there. Now, let's go through the day. All right, the morning anyway. We had taken... Here we go. This was the way it opened up this morning. All right, this was the first trade that had bullish divergence. You had the bullish cross, tested the BBC, the up close, and it went up. Another one right over here where it went up. On this one, I'm going to take that off because it tested the BBC and then it gave an up close, but the cycle was really headed against you on that one, so there was nothing there. So you had a win there, a win there. We actually took this one and we won that one. We took this one and we won that one as well. You can see down here we had this bearish divergence here, and the same type of divergence was over here. What we were anticipating was the green working its way down into the cycle, the green again working its way down into the cycle portion of the slingshot. All right. There was another one right in here that we missed, another one that we took here that we lost, we had a break even here, another one here that we missed. Over here we were waiting for this to come together. The actual spot where it came together over here, we didn't have the divergence anymore. Okay, right in here, this was right at the crude came out today. Among other things, among other news events, crude oil inventories came out today. So we didn't put on any trades in this little bit right here. All right, we just let it work itself out. But there was another opportunity right there. And over here, it wasn't the optimal thing because the cycle is in the middle. All right, even though there was divergence, it was in the middle. I prefer to have the cycle be oversold or at least headed down. But right here was another trade we took at the end of the morning session, okay, right in here, that one, and we actually put that one on too. right here was another one. This was during the break, and this was while Dwayne was speaking. We had bullish divergence. It didn't actually test the BBC there, but this is the one right here that just happened while we were while I was doing this recap. All right, I said right here at 87.27 was a spot to short, and it dropped down to 87.13. That's $140 a contract right there in the time it took me to do this recap. All right, that is the crude. Now let me slide the crude over and I'll go through the NQ because we did take some trades on the NQ. Let's see. Hang on. We were actually in a trade right there on the NQ. All right. Let's go here. All right, this is where the NQ started. Now you're looking for the same thing, the bullish cross, the pullback down, test of the BBC, and an up close with the divergence. All right, we had it right there. That worked out fine. I took this trade this morning. I ended up taking a break even on it. I missed this one, but I did take this one and ended up getting a break even. I didn't take this one or this one. I missed a lot of trades, as you can see. Right here we had the bearish divergence, price pulled back up, tested the BBC, gave a down close, it did it again right over here. Over here I did take this trade, we got an up close right there for some for some profit. I ended up taking a break even on that trade apparently. And right here, came back down, tested the BBC with bullish divergence and an up close. Again, right here with the up close. Over here was a short trade. I took that one and stopped out on it. All right, and then just recently here I took this one and I took some profit and got back to break even. Actually, and I had left an order on there. I am now up 8 ticks because the way that I got out of it, I forgot I had a stop on there. And when it dropped down, it made me short. All right, so not very often a mistake actually works out in my favor, but that time it did. All right, that was the NQ this morning. Now let me go through the ES. On the ES, let's see. Now I'm going to show it to you. Well, this was the first trade that I took, okay? I was looking to short the BBC, the first pullback to the BBC. I did, and I was expecting it would get down here. It had some trouble here at the MA1, so I took the trade off. I just took profit on it. But let's look at a couple things here. When it pulled back up here, the cycle was red and headed down, and the bias line was also red, okay? The next trade, after the BBC went through the weekly trading zone, the next trade was this pullback up right here. Now, on this pullback, the bias line was green, and the cycle was blue and headed up. I took the short. It gave me a couple ticks profit, but then it stopped me out. Okay, so at this point, I was minus 5 ticks, and that's where I ended the morning. It just kept drifting up all the way up here this morning. All right, you can see it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bars right here at 65.75. That's the high of the day, and it's selling off of there right now. It pulled back down. This was at the end of the morning session. You know, I said I wasn't going to take this trade right here, but you can see the cycle portion of the slingshot is overbought, and it had been for some time, and the bias was red. I didn't go long there. Okay? That was the ES this morning. Let's see. I'm not sure what, I want to check and see what we have for volume on the morning. Just going to flip this to a 50,000 contract. Yeah, it's right there. Right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. So we have about 850,000 in volume. About 850,000 in volume today, so it's a pretty low volume day. Tomorrow will probably be a lot like it, too. Now let's look at this. The YM. I didn't take any trades on the YM, but I'll just show you where they were setting up. Okay, it's the same thing as the other four tick range charts. Okay, you get your bullish cross right here. You get your bullish cross. You pull back, test to the BBC with an up close with bullish divergence. All right, the next one that I had identified anyway was over here. You bearish cross, test to the BBC, down close with the bearish divergence. Again here. And here. And it was even here too, but the cycle was moving up a little bit here. So I wouldn't have considered that. Right in here, on the other side, you have your MA1 crosses up above the BBC. Price comes back, tests the BBC. You have bullish divergence. You wait for your up close and get long right in there. And that went right up into the zone. And that was pretty much it on the day, guys. It wasn't a ton to do in there. You know, there's one market that I didn't go over at all this morning that had big moves today. And you know what? Why don't I take a couple of minutes right now and go over it? I gotta actually create a chart for it. Oh no, here's one right here. Here's one right here, as a matter of fact. This is the 6E. Alright, now I haven't looked at the 6E yet this morning, but I know it had some big moves, so I'm sure we had some good setups this morning. I'm certain that we had some good opportunity. All right. There. Okay, here is today. Now, blow it up just a little bit more so you can see it, and we can start parsing through it. All right, it got a little crazy right in here, but if we go over here early on, 6:45, yeah, right in here. Okay. Right here looks good. Around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Right there we had some bearish divergence, you see. Tested the BBC with a down close. We had it there. And again, there. And over here. Okay. You see down here on the bottom, this is where we had the bearish divergence, right down there. Okay. Now this is my first look at the... my first look at the euro this morning. But from what I can see, oh, that wasn't even today. That was yesterday. Hang on. Yeah, that was yesterday. All right. Well, let's start with today then. Sorry. Do-over. you don't get do-overs when you're actually recording it. Okay, we didn't have any divergence in here. We had divergence, but the cycle was headed down against it. This right in here seems to be about the first spot. Right there, but you needed the down close. Yeah, right there. That one didn't work out. The next one was right over here. and that one would have made up for it. You know, I use 8 ticks risk on these, so I would have lost 8 ticks on that and easily made it back over here. There were a couple of opportunities right in here. Okay. Let's see. Over here, the cycle was headed up, so I wouldn't have taken that. A little bit of bearish divergence right in here. Okay. Nothing in there. On the long side here, once it had a bullish cross right here at the MA1 up above the BBC, you see this is all the same. This setup is the same exact setup as the other one that we were looking at. It's just a different market. That's all. Same indicator set, same everything. It's just a different market. Over here, we had a little bit of bearish divergence right in here. Right there was the bearish divergence. When I say divergence, I mean the green down here is going away from the red and blue. Okay. Excuse me. Right in here. And this is pretty much current. Right in there. Okay. That would have been the opportunity there. And a little bit of an opportunity right here as well. With a bearish divergence down here. Alright. And that was the euro. So, there was some opportunity on the euro this morning. It looks like there was one losing trade right in here. But most of them looked out. Looked to be pretty good. Alright. Now, let's just look back here at this crude. See, we have bullish divergence here on the crude right now, so an up close after testing the BBC would be an opportunity to get long. The crude oil seems to be really going sideways here, though, right at the moment. The NQ was pulling back up to the BBC, and this has bearish divergence right there. Okay, same thing over here on the YM. All right, and that is pretty much it for the morning, guys. Those were the trades we took, the trades we didn't take, and the trades that set up. I forgot to mention, if you have not taken a free trial with us and you want to take a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply, and you'll be able to use all the charts and everything that you see in here right now. You'll get 2 hours per day in our live trading room for 5 business days. And that's what you get. All right. You get all the data feeds and all the charting platform and everything for free for 5 business days. No credit card required. Just go to www.cfrn.net/apply. For everyone who is in here who is a partner, there is a partners meeting tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, partners meeting. For everyone who is in here who is on the free trial currently, you must be a partner to get into the partners meeting tonight. I have some things that I'm going to go over tonight that I've been sort of piecing out to people. I know we had one partner this morning that said he made $580 prior to the open trading crude using the thing that I showed the partners before the holiday. All right, that's it. I'm going to shut the recording off, and that is that. All right, recording is off.
All righty then. You know, and yes. Something you just mentioned about the fact that when people do take the free trial, they have access to the charts, the data, all of that. That is all very true. It's real-time data. It's not delayed. It's every futures contract from lumber to livestock, including E-minis. It's also the currency futures. It's also every Forex pair if you're a Forex trader. Now, when you're building your business plan for trading, that there are very few fixed costs in trading. Your biggest fixed cost or expense is losing trades or trades that are not profitable. Okay, and that's just a cost of doing business. But one of your other fixed costs is your brokerage platform, your charts, your data, your commissions. And we use Daniel's Trading, Bert and Leslie specifically, for a number of good reasons. The monetary reason is that kind of takes a back seat to the top-notch customer service and personal interest that they take in each and every one of our CFRN partners. I mean, they really go out of their way to help you in every way possible, from the mechanicals of setting up your platform and learning how to set up your charts and understanding how to execute the trades, to kind of watching over your shoulder and keeping an eye on, you know, what you're doing and how you're doing and checking in with you. And they won't force themselves on you, but they might call and go, I noticed you took a trade this morning, and I was just, what was the setup for that? In other words, they'll be kind and gentle, and they'll try to help keep you on a path that points in the direction of profitability. You know, they can't make you profitable. I can't make you profitable. Michael can't. No one can. Anyone that tells you they can, you need to be very careful and probably run in the other direction. Because ultimately, it's up to you. You're the one in control. It's your emotions. It's your mouse that gets clicked. But aside from all that Bert and Leslie do in the realm of mentoring and customer service and all of the things that a broker should do, but that most brokers today don't do so much. Now, Daniel's Trading, they're in a whole different category in my book. And then inside of the world of Daniel's Trading, Bert and Leslie, they really, in my opinion, rise to the top. But let's talk about the monetary side of it. With some brokerage firms, some data vendors, you can spend $500 a month on charts and data. And some people will try to convince you that somehow it's a better chart or it's better data and how it really is worth $500 or $600 a month. And the only thing I can do is disagree. With Daniel's, you get top-notch charts, top-notch platform, great data, and the price you pay as a client is zero. You don't pay anything for the charts. You don't pay anything for the data. You don't pay any platform fees. They actually partner with you. They make an investment in your success. They pay for your charts. Now, now keep in mind that charts and data aren't free. They cost money. The exchanges charge money for this stuff, okay, for the data. So they're actually making, when you become a client, they're saying, hey, you know what, you have faith in us, you become a client with us, then we're going to show you that we have a belief in you and your desire to succeed as a trader. We're going to make a financial investment in your success. They pay for your data. Now, that same data, literally, that you'll pay other places $500-$600 a month for, Daniel's Trading, Bert and Leslie, they pay for your data. Because they would rather than you worrying about how much money you're spending to keep your doors open, they would rather you have some time to focus on how you can become profitable as a trader. Now, we talk about this periodically, but today I just felt it really important to bring up, because I know that many of you get caught up in that struggle between, and I know that changing brokers and moving to a different platform is in fact a major life experience. It comes right after death, divorce, changing platforms, in that order. That should be the proper order. It really is kind of a big deal. But you have to weigh the options. if you have a broker now where when you call that number, you don't know who you're going to talk to, and maybe you can get through to them. Maybe they don't really have time to talk to you. I don't know. I don't know what you're experiencing. I just know what I experienced prior to working with Burt and Leslie is that at one place I never knew who was going to take the call. And that person, I could tell, really had no trading experience. They knew how to answer brokerish type questions, sort of like reading from a manual. But with Burt and Leslie, you get something very unique in that not only do they answer the phone and do they take time to talk with you and help you, but they have many years of trading experience, actually trading, putting on and taking off trades. So they understand everything that you are going through when you call them and go, man, I'm dealing with this. And they go, yep, I've dealt with that. And you go, really? And they go, yeah. And you go, well, how'd you deal with it? And they tell you. Now, whether you take their advice, follow their advice, whether their solution to that issue works for you in the way that it worked for them, you won't know until you try. But I do know that you can take a free trial. Not a half-hearted attempt, but a full-blown free trial. Roll out the red carpet. You get everything. Just as if you were a client, that's exactly how you'll be treated. All you have to do is go to cfrn.net/apply. And everything I just talked about, you'll get all of that for one full week, 5 full trading days. So if you were to sign up today, you would still get tomorrow. You would have the charts over the weekend to work with and the indicators, and you would still have 4 days next week. So it's never a bad day to sign up for the free trial, okay? Because we don't count it as a calendar week. We count it as 5 actual trading days. And since the trading room has already closed today, if you were to sign up for the free trial today, although you'd be able to download your platform today, get your charts going, get your indicators indicating, tomorrow morning would actually be considered day one for you in the free trial. So it's cfrn.net/apply. We do use double opt-in confirmation because we don't like spam. We hate spam as much as you do. So you'll get an email that says, you just signed up for our free trial. Was that really you and do you really want it? And then you have to click it and say, yeah, I really do. Because spam filters are very strong these days. You might have to go look in your bulk mail folder. You might have to look in your spam mail folder. Most times it'll just end up in your inbox. But if you don't see it within a couple minutes, go look in those other places. And if you still don't see it, try to sign up again. And if it won't let you, if it tells you you're already in the system, call toll-free 866-928-3310. You'll talk to Leslie. She'll send me an email. The subject will say help. And we'll figure out what went wrong and we'll get you in. Okay. Now, once you get confirmed, then you'll be sent another email. And this one will have all the links you need for downloading the platform, for getting the layouts onto your computer. It's got all of our email addresses, telephone numbers, videos to watch, everything soup to nuts. And you can have all of that today with a few mouse clicks, cfrn.net/apply. You punch a few buttons and there you go. You have a free trial. The best of the best, okay? Are we the best traders? Well, I'm not going to say that. Are we the most transparent? Probably, you know. So at least I can say I know that we are some of the most transparent. We strive to be transparent in everything that we do, okay? You have questions, we answer them. We don't take offense when you question our guru status because we don't walk around with guru heads. That's just not how we roll. We are a community of believers who trade for a living. And we invite you to become a part of that community. And that's how we like to keep it. Not that one is above the other, but that we're all a group of people, you know, laboring together to be successful in this business of trading. Now, they say that the jobs report coming out tomorrow could send the markets higher no matter how it comes out. And here's the reason why. I know I switched gears really quick, but I want to move on. If the jobs numbers come out bad, that increases the likelihood of QE3. So the market goes up. The job numbers come out bad. Now, wait a minute. If the job numbers are bad, that increases the likelihood of QE3. If the numbers come out good, then maybe the economy really is getting better. And the markets could go higher on that. So I found that interesting this morning as I was doing a little bit of research and study that, you know, people from both sides of the street, ones who are betting on bad numbers and ones who are betting on good numbers, are both saying that if they're right, the market should move higher. So we'll see. I'm not going to stake a claim on that right now. I am looking for the market right now to make a move down to back to the 60-61 zone. That long trade that we passed on the 10K, that thing has flipped over and is now offering up a short trade at what price, Michael? 63.50 roughly?
Yeah, 63.5.
Yeah, right now there. From 63.5 back down to the zone at 61, that's only 2.5 points. So we could just get into a little bit of a choppy kind of an area here. But the very things that were keeping me out of the trade earlier, those two indicators, and we can talk about those tonight if you guys want in the partners meeting, both that bias indicator and the cycle indicator, they're both red and look positioned for a short trade. So we'll see. I mean, it's been a slow drift higher this morning, so being short here is certainly counter trend to what we've seen for the day's action. But we'll keep an eye on that. I invited an old friend to pop in and visit with us this morning. David is on vacation. He decided to make it official that he's just going to take the week off. He's not going to come on. He's not going to harass the president or any of the fun stuff that he normally does. He's just actually going to take the time off. I guess he's in his cabana. So if you're looking for David, you can probably find him at the cabana beside one of the pools somewhere there in Las Vegas. But my friend Jonathan, who has been trading for a number of years, and I'm inviting him on today. I don't see Robin in the audience either, so I think she is taking the holiday. Oh, wait. There she is.
Yes, Robin's. Robin's in.
She's there. Okay. All right. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up Robin's mic, and I'm going to open up Jonathan's mic, and we're just going to have a little chat here for a few minutes, and I'll introduce these two guys to each other. And then some of you in the audience that have any questions for either of these folks, pipe it in. Type in your questions. So with that, Jonathan, welcome to the show, and Robin, welcome to the show.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Jonathan,
good morning.
Welcome, and Dwayne, and I hope you all had a great happy 4th.
Yes. Yes, it was good. It was good.
Well, well, well. Jonathan, it's good to hear from you. Robin, so you were in the pool, but you're out of the pool. Is that the deal?
Yeah, came out of the pool.
Now, were you at the pool with David, or were you at your own pool?
No. My own little splash pool in the back.
Oh, okay. Is that one of those inflatable?
It's little, but it's effective.
Is it inflatable or?
No. I have my rubber ducks, and I can float around in there and swim back and forth, actually, I've been watching my hummingbird. I have a hummingbird that's about 1 foot from my kitchen window, and she's nesting right now, and she has this habit. When my cat comes to the window and sits there, she comes up, and she's almost nose to nose with the cat. She loves the cat. And I can't get a picture because every time I take the picture, I get a reflection in the glass. And it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen with this cat and this hummingbird, almost nose to nose. It's so fabulous. And she, every time I come to a window, if I'm in the office here, she'll come all the way to the office window and say hello to me. And if I go to the kitchen window, she goes there. She's really pretty amazing. And I watch the babies grow. Oh my gosh, I've gone through about 6-7 of them, where they have babies, and the babies will sit on the edge of the nest, and I get pictures of them before they fly, and it's really pretty incredible to watch them. They're so amazing. They're so, I forget how many millions of times their wings go. They're so incredibly fast. And she's very tutorial. She wards off any kind of other birds that are near the feeders. She just wants the whole place to herself.
Hmm.
So that's fascinating
little creatures they are.
Yeah, they sure are.
So, Jonathan, how are you today? Did you have a nice 4th of July?
Oh, I had a wonderful 4th of July, thank you. And can't be more thankful. As you know, in this area, the weather was supremely nice compared to what it might normally be.
Yeah, when we went out last night to go watch the fireworks, I think it was a lovely 88 degrees or 85, yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah, exactly. And for us, that's amazing. Especially had stuff to do in the morning out in one of the parks, and it had a nice little rain, and the weather was cool. And for us at this time of year, that's just improbable. So very grateful for nice weather yesterday.
Where did you go to watch the fireworks?
At the church that we attend, they do a fireworks every year.
Okay.
So we had some stuff to do there. We manned a booth and watched the fireworks and had kind of like a summer little fair out there for all the folks.
How about you, Robin? Did you go to in Vegas? I'm assuming they must have mega fireworks. Nothing like San
Diego,
but
they do them off the top of the casinos, and it's pretty impressive. And then there's a local one by the local casino, and then of course you have to watch the ones that are in the streets, that they're not setting fire to your house. So yeah, I had my neighbor was on house watch, and she was watching the kids on the street, and I ran over really quick to the local casino, but I could see the ones from the tops of the casinos. I don't really particularly care for those kind of crowds. Those always scare me. But I like to see the fireworks from a distance. I've always liked fireworks. I mean, my dad used to take us down to the Hudson River in New York and look at the Macy's Day fireworks, which I heard were extraordinary. And then my friend in Boston, we used to go to the top of his Beacon Hill apartment, and we could hear the music even from the clamshell, and you can get it on the radio as well, and we would watch the fireworks in Boston. But though, I don't know how those guys did. I didn't check the news, but the weather has been just absolutely horrible across the country. I can't believe it.
Part of the country was without electricity yesterday still.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going for, on Saturday, I'm going for my ham radio test. And, when you think about it, all those people without electricity, if you've switched your phone service and you don't have electricity, none of their cell phones are working because they can't get power. And so, the ham radios are the ones that are going to be there in the emergency. Even with 9/11, the only radios that were working were ham radios. So going for my license on Saturday, and hopefully I'll pass.
Now, why do you need a license for ham radio? Because, I mean, you're not doing Morse code or anything, are you?
It's regulated by FCC.
Okay.
So all ham radio is regulated by the FCC, and, you can communicate all over the place, around the world, if you have a powerful antenna, and, it's just FCC regulated. And
so do you have a ham rig in your house?
No, not yet. I'm going to get a handheld. I'm not going to get anything extravagant, but it's becoming very interesting to me. We're going to use it on our search and rescues. Because again, it's that we can't get on the small, tiny radios that you can just, you know, buy in the, in like a Walmart or
right.
something. You can't get reception in the mountains, but with the ham radios you can. So when we're on a search, and we went out on a search, a week ago, and I had never been in this location, and I couldn't get a cell phone reception, nothing in this place. And they said, "My God, how do you, you know, how do you communicate with somebody?" So, you know, it's the mountains really make a huge difference, and the ham radios can get you around that.
When I was in high school, I dated a girl who her dad had the big setup with the big mic and. And the huge antenna on top of the house, and I only saw it a couple times. I never actually heard him talking on it, but I have been around some other ham operators and listened to ham operators, and it's still, interestingly enough, today in the world of Skype and all of the other kinds
yep.
of, you know, instantaneous communication that we have around the world, there's a great number of ham enthusiasts. In fact, there's a very popular podcast out on iTunes for ham enthusiasts.
Yeah, there, it's actually growing. You know, with the supposedly the end of the world coming in December, you know, that's what all those survivalists are really looking towards because, again, all the cell phones are not going to work and the phones are not going to work and everything else won't be working. But, you know, I'm really looking to contact the aliens.
I heard a radio commercial last night on the way back from the fireworks from Tom Baudet. He said that Motel 6, they actually are taking reservations after December 21st of 2012.
Right?
He goes, no disrespect to King, whoever, whatever he does, but, you know, just we're going to go ahead and keep taking reservations. So, Jonathan, I'd like to introduce you to Robin. You've heard her on the show before.
I have, and thoroughly enjoyed her comments. I have.
Well, thank you so much. They're just very kind of you. You know, I wonder if anybody's getting anything out there. You know,
they are.
As somebody who has traded for a while and listening to what you say, I can say that with clarity that what you offer is absolute truth, having been through most of the things you discuss on a personal level.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I'm finally going to get my book out. I decided this year, and I'm writing it now. And I'm, you know, anybody that wants to put in some of their challenges, they may end up in the book. And yeah, I need to get something out there, and it's long overdue. Everybody's stolen my stuff over these years. It's time for me to get my stuff out there.
So we have a little bit of a battle here at 64, would you say?
Yep, we do. And the market's just kind of hanging here looking for some direction. You know, Jonathan, I know that I kind of asked you last minute, so it didn't give you much time to prepare before coming on today. But I was wondering if maybe, because most people have heard my journey through trading and Michael's journey and David's journey, and Robin has shared with us about some of her journey. But I thought maybe sure. people might be interested in hearing someone else's journey and a different perspective. Maybe you could spend a few minutes telling us how you got into e-mini futures trading and if that's the only thing you've ever traded and maybe some of your ups and some of your downs and
sure
it would be
my pleasure
and, yeah
sure I started approximately about 7 years ago, maybe six, and initially started not understanding what I was doing in any stretch of the imagination. I was in a place where I was looking for an avenue to invest and or look at an alternative type of employment or lifestyle, having been in the secular world and business for many, many years, and kind of stumbled across somebody who was mentoring and teaching e-mini trading, and I found it very interesting. And as an analytical person, figured that I certainly could be one of those 5%. I couldn't see why not, right? So why not me? Why not now, right? So I joined, and I think the tale is very much like other folks. Had a roller coaster of success and lack thereof, and as somebody who's always wanting to try to do better, a continual search for a better way, a different thing, and in that I would find success and then lack thereof. And on that journey, I did stumble across CFRN and have been a listener of yours for, I don't know, probably 5.5 or 6 of those 7 years. Have always appreciated the clarity with which you speak and the way you approach, and your calm demeanor has always been a blessing, I think, not only to myself but to traders all around that get a chance to listen to you. So I want to take a moment to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
And during that, I think I've looked at a variety of different ways to trade. I did have an opportunity to meet up with and enjoy trading with Michael there, and I appreciate his long-term and longevity in this business. I mean, you come across a lot of people who are fly by night and here one day and gone the next, and I would have to give Michael great compliments on his longevity and his success throughout the years, as I've had a chance to follow what he does and how he does it. My hat is tipped to him also.
Right, thank you.
You're welcome. I found myself looking at a lot of things, and I think that as a trader, you have to find something that works for you, that you feel comfortable with, that you're confident with, and makes sense. And so I think that, as you often say, there's never a single answer. There's never one way to do it. But in the book, like Mark Douglas talks about, you find yourself something that you believe that gives you an advantage, and then you trade it radically and indiscriminately, and you move from there. And I think that's the journey I've been on, through ups and downs, lefts and rights. And I just love the idea that I get to stay connected with you and be involved and be a part of the family of believers who trade for a variety of reasons, but mostly because they're doing something bigger and greater than just themselves.
Having a greater purpose than ourselves, I think, is important for all areas of our life, not just trading.
I agree. I mean, having been in business and around many companies, I can tell you without a doubt that on those companies that I've either helped build or been a part of, the ones that succeeded were always companies that embraced an idea that there was a greater cause than just the business of doing business, and were able to find a place to put that energy, the time, the emphasis of what they did in a different format than strictly the art of doing business. And for those companies, they found just a great and innumerable success.
Now, do you trade primarily intraday, or do you do any swing trading, any bigger picture stuff?
You know, I've always been a short-term trader. Through success and lack thereof, I only dabbled briefly in swing trading. And so typically I trade much shorter time frames. I'm looking for the capacity to extract smaller bits of moves out of the market.
And how's Robin.
Could I ask would you mind if I asked a couple questions?
Sure.
On your strategy and have you've approached this in your time trading, would you mind?
Robin, I would be honored.
Thank you. I was just curious as to when you first started trading, and you felt that you were whatever contracts you were trading, how long of a move did you go for when you were trading?
Initially, my trading was probably no more than 4, 5, 6, 7 ticks at a time.
Uh-huh. And what are you doing now?
I would say that I trade multiple lots.
Uh-huh.
And so I have still that philosophy with a portion of, but I've also over the years learned to to accept, embrace, and take advantage of opportunities where you can participate in a longer move and allow the market to do what it's going to do without the anxiety, you know, fear and frustration mm-hmm. that might come along with it otherwise.
Yeah, that was the point that I was looking to make, because I have found that the real high-end traders go from anywhere from 5 to 8 ticks as their solid, you know, trade that they look to get for, and that they use size over time to, you know, to go for the runners, but they do that 5 to 8 ticks because of the certainty. And the probability of them hitting that is higher than, you know, going for the really long move. Yet, you know, they'll lock in their cash and they'll let the runner go. So that's interesting that you say that, because that's what I've found over time with these high-end guys.
And I would agree. I think that most traders over a journey ultimately come to somewhat of that same realization.
Mm-hmm.
That is the optimal way to trade, and so I would second, or if we were doctors, I would say I concur.
Great.
There's a question from Bruce, and you can both answer it. But Bruce is curious what sort of risk reward that, I guess, Robin, for those you're speaking of, the higher end traders who are mm-hmm. looking for 5 to 8 ticks, what sort of risk are they willing to take on for that kind of a gain? I think where Bruce is headed is that's not a lot of gain, and so how much do I have to risk for that?
Well, again, I think, you know, when you're asking that particular question, that tells me right away that's a newer trader. And you have to really look at the size of your portfolio. And I know that these high-end guys that are doing millions and millions and millions of dollars are not willing to do more than, you know, maybe 10% risk. They're not willing to lose more than that. And that's quite a chunk of change. So,
Yeah, it is.
And so if you, you know, use those same numbers for a smaller portfolio, the key thing is you don't want – this is what I see happening. A new trader will have a tendency to have – they're trading one contract, they're still learning their system, and they hold on. And then just as Jonathan said, that's when the anxiety kicks in, that's when the emotions kick in, and they hold on and hold on and hold on, and their emotions now take over, and then their emotions make them do things that they shouldn't do. And that causes the problem. And you do that repetitively. Now you've put in place a cycle of emotional trading. And so that's the typical challenge right there. That's the typical challenge. Then what happens is over time, they'll say, well, if you're losing, let me get back my money faster, and I'll increase size, or they'll double down on the losing trade. And so they start to make these trading errors that, again, become habit, and then their portfolios go down faster and faster and faster. Instead of saying, I have a number that I'm not willing to give up in a week, so I'm not willing to lose more than this in 1 week. And these are parameters that have to be set in place by each individual. And again, something that Jonathan said with your system, you know, you're looking for something that works for you. You have to come up with some kind of number that works for you. I always say to somebody, what is the number that you can live with that you won't wake up the next day and worry about? So how much are you willing to lose in a trade? How much are you willing to lose in the day, in the week, that you can wake up the next day and not think about it? And not think about revenge trading. So, you know, there's a whole series of dynamics that can kick in if you're, you know, being over anxious and trying to build this very quickly. You have to do it little bit by little bit. The more you build your cash, and the more consistency and more certainty you get in your strategy, then as your portfolio increases, you can take more and more risk. But you need to think about, and this is what I did psychologically, I do with a lot of my traders, and feel free to do this, if you're trading one contract, and typically your goal is to trade five, then what I have people do is, especially when they're coaching with me, because I want their strategy to get consistent, I have them trade one contract, and then they have the number that they made for the week. They'll have a dollar amount. And then I'll say, okay, how much would you have made if you traded five contracts this week? And then they have a second dollar amount. And I have them look at the five contract dollar amount every week, because that's the reality. That's what they would be trading. Instead of, oh, I only made $100 this week and I didn't make enough and I've got to push. So I kind of get them conditioned that they're doing five, but that's the dollar amount that they're shooting for. The key thing is the quality of the trade. Make sense?
When you say the quality of the trade, are you referring to the high probability nature of the setup? Is that?
No, when I say probability of the trade, I mean are you in control of the entry, and are you in control of the exit?
Okay.
And so in my rating system, when people get my CD, if you just get the CD, I've got a couple CDs left that are on the special right now. I'm going to be redoing it. But I have Sharpen Your Trading Performance as a CD that has you rating your trades. And it's really the quality of your trade that determines how much money you're going to make. Now, it doesn't mean I have my trades rated 1, 2, and 3. One is the trade is totally in control, both the entry and the exit. A two is half of the trade's in control, half is not. And the third one is both sides of the trade are out of control. And so the goal for my coaching clients is that they are in control of their trades. You can actually lose money on a one because you entered the trade, the market threw you a curve, and then you managed to close, but you controlled it. And you minimize the loss. Or it hit your stop because you were, again, in control. That's a good trade. Okay? The key thing is that are you in control of both entry and exit? You know, you come back, let's say, from, having your coffee. You sit down and all of a sudden you see the market running and you jump in. That's out of control entry. Mm-hmm. You just jumped in because you saw it running. And so you were afraid to miss out, so you jumped in. But then all of a sudden you realized you jumped in, you start looking at your indicators, you start looking at your setup the way it should have been, and you make your adjustments and you either minimize the loss or you take a small profit. That's in control on the exit. Now, let's say you went in and you knew your setup and you went into the trade and you positioned where you wanted to get in, you knew exactly where you were going to get in, you pinpointed that point, but all of a sudden, it started reversing on you and going the other direction. You panicked and got out. Instead of looking at your indicators, all of a sudden you went into emotion again. That's also a two. And then a three is both sides of the trade are out of control. You just jumped into the trade, and then you just jumped out of the trade. If you're in that place, you shouldn't be trading. And so you'd be surprised when I first get my coaching clients and I say, okay, how many ones, twos, and threes do you have? And I have them analyze 10 of their past trades. That's actually the first lesson. And I can't tell you how many come in and say, well, I had one one. I had 10 trades this week, and I had one one. I had five twos, and the rest were threes. And I'll go, okay, we need to get rid of those threes. So what the rating system does is allows you to specifically target where your issues are in your trading methodology and your setup, whatever that is, and again, everybody's is different, to fine-tune what you're doing to get your consistency. And by usually the second or third coaching session, I go, okay, how many ones, twos, and threes did you have? And they'll say, well, I took 10 trades this week. I had five ones. I had four twos. And I only had one three. And then right away I'll say, okay, well, what happened with the three? And so we go through that process, and it allows me to pinpoint what we've got to work on emotionally, but it also allows the trader to pinpoint what they're doing incorrectly. And usually by the fourth session, I don't have any threes coming up at all, and now the consistency is getting in there. And so they're getting higher ones, and then sure enough, the money's right behind it. But most people don't have a methodology. I think I'm the only one that's ever created this. I don't think there's anybody that has a methodology that literally has you analyzing the trades in this approach to pinpoint the strategy or the emotions that are out of control that need to be worked on. There's nobody that I know that's come up with a strategy like this. And so that's what I teach in Sharpen Your Trading Performance. And again, I'm coming out with a new one, and maybe that's going to be the first book. I don't know. But it's a good methodology. It works. And if you go off track and you have a blow up where you're overextending that account, you know, for the guy or the person, I don't know who it was that asked the question, it's very easy to blow up an account when you're pushing beyond what your account can handle. I mean, you can't be trading, you know, 3-4 contracts and let it go against you very far if your account is small. I mean, you just can't do it. So you have to have a plan that works that portfolio up slowly. But as you're doing that, you should be learning and gaining your consistency and certainty and being solid about your setup. And as you do that, then you can start to increase. You have more in your portfolio. You know, set yourself a limit that when I get to this point, I'm allowed to add a contract. When I get to this point in my portfolio, I get to add a contract. And so that's kind of, you know, what I'm saying as far as, you know, the quality of your trade. It's the control. Are you in control of your entry as well as your exit?
Okay, those are Jonathan, I want to talk to you about your specific risk reward on this scenario, but I know Michael is going to have to take off in a few minutes, and so I just want to, Michael, on the charts that you have up right now, I know that you highlighted a YM trade, which is a trade that we teach the partners. Now, that particular trade, how much risk did you have on that particular trade?
7 ticks.
Okay. Now, 7 ticks, guys, on the YM, that's actually 7 points. On the YM, the Dow E-mini, it's $5 per point. So 10 points would be $50. So 10 points on the YM would be equivalent to 1 point on the ES. And what sort of a target do you have? Or do you have a hard target on this trade?
I have a 20 tick target, but what I'm looking for, my initial spot that I'm looking for is right here, the swing high.
Okay.
You can see I got in right here at 12,860. I'm looking for it to get at least to right here at 12,868. Once it gets there, then I just look to the left.
Now, I want to say this. For those of you that have been around a while, I knew that his answer was going to be 7 because that's how he trades the YM. And I've always said, and he knows that I say, and that I think he's a little stingy with his risk on the YM. But that's what he trades. That's what he's comfortable with. That's what he's confident with. And where I feel I need a little more room on the YM, the way Michael has put it together and what works for him is he's risking 7 points with a target of 20. And so that would be a 1-3 or pretty close to a 1-3. Now, does that mean you always have to let it run to the full 20?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I seldom do let it run the full 20. You know, as the conditions change, I mean, the way that my setup works, the way that I look for the thing to come together, right here, for instance, on this trade, we had bullish divergence right here, and what I anticipate happening is this little green line right here is going to work its way up into the cycle portion of the slingshot. When that happens, it's usually pretty close to time for another pullback. So that's what I anticipate seeing here. Now, when that happens, I will you know, I may take the trade off completely. I may reduce my risk. You know, I'm, right now my stop is at break even. I don't have any risk on this trade right now. The fact that we closed up above the MA1 right here, to me, there's a lot of different things that each trade tells me, but the fact that we closed above the MA1 right here suggests we're going to get up here to the prior swing high. What we don't want to see is a close below the MA1 now that we've had a close above the MA1. The MA1 contains price, typically, like it did right here. You see on this move up right here. Down here, when it held the price right here, I did short right here, but I took the trade off right here when I saw that the MA1 was holding the price. That's just the way that I trade it. Right now, we've closed up above the MA1. We should get at least to right here, okay? The problem that we're having is over here on the ES, this level right here at 65.75 is just stopping everything right there. So far, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times it sold off that level. So that is what I anticipate in this trade. You can see I slid my DOM over. You can see right there is where I entered at 12.860. All right. And, you know, this bar may be the one that closes below the MA1, and if it does, I don't have any risk on the trade anymore. It'll just take me out. And it wouldn't surprise me if it did actually close below the MA1. So, in Robin's rating system, I think this would pretty much be a 1. Because, you know, pretty much all the trades that I take, I know exactly where my entry is going to be. Depending which market it is, I don't have a target on some markets that move very quickly. See that? It closed below the MA1, and it just took me out of break-even. I'm no longer in the trade.
I mean, it's what you're doing is a perfect 1, that you know your 3 price points, your entry, your exit, and your stop loss. And, you know, specifically, you know, what you're looking for. I can't tell you how many traders don't have that. And that's where you have to get to. If you're new and you're just beginning, you must know these prices. The prices will keep you out of the emotion. The more you can define what you're doing, the better it is and easier it will be for you to trade. The emotion will come out of it. If you don't have that, you're going to go right into the emotion. And that's what really traders really have a hard time with. So you're such a great example, Michael, of how, you know, how you approach the trade. You know, you've got your indicators. You've got your, you know, your divergence going on. He has specifically what's going to happen, a step-by-step of what's going to happen when he takes the trade on the entry and where he's going to get out of the trade. I mean, it's fabulous. I mean, it's just, that's why I'm here. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I'm here, because it really is so specific.
Now, I have a question here from Bill. Bill says, Bill, I understand the spirit of your email, but I'll approach it from a kinder, gentler manner. Robin's comments that traders with millions and millions of dollars in their portfolio are willing to risk 10% on a single trade is, well, I guess I'll just use the word baloney. Now, here's where this gets very interesting, Bill. You say, my research suggests that 3% would be a max risk on any given trade. Now, let me ask you a question, Bill. How many million-dollar traders do you know, and how could your research possibly suggest what any one individual may do with their portfolio and with their money? You go on to say, because when I had a $5,000 account, let's see, 10% of that would be, I don't know, Michael, could you carry the 1 for me?
$500.
Oh, my God. Am I a nutcase? I risked $500 on a trade? Really? Did I do that? I did. Okay. With a $5,000 account, I risked $500. So, Bill, I guess I was wrong. Okay? Because your research suggests that what I did was baloney. When, in fact, what I did was the truth. That's just what I did. And so the reason that your comment concerns me is because you're basing something on what your research suggests, not from what you've actually done yourself. And see, there's a big old gulf there between what your research suggests and what you've actually done. So anyway, go ahead.
And let me qualify that, because I think it's a great question, because I think it's important for traders to, especially, you know, when you're listening, is the information that you're getting accurate? I mean, I think that's a very fair question. And I'm not going to say that the people that have told me that do it on every trade. That's kind of the maximum of what they do, of what they would do. However, let me qualify this. They do this knowing that they can get back that money very, very quickly with their system. So they have learned in their methodology that the risk that they can take can be recuperated extremely quickly if they lose it. So as an example, if I have a trader that does a 10%, will put a risk on, those traders will put that on because they know the market, they know the swing of the market, they know the typical pullback, and they have so much on, a lot of times they can't get out of the trade. So if you got 100 contracts on, it's not the easiest thing to get out of the trade where you want to. So they have to have some, you know, slush fund room, and they'll get out of some of it, but 10 is their, you know, drop dead, get out of it. So there's a lot of other intricacies that are put into that equation for a 10%. You asked me a question, I gave a quick answer, maybe that's my fault and I apologize. My goal is that you understand that these guys have a very specific strategy on managing their risk reward and managing their cash. And that's the biggest thing that I found with new traders: do not manage their cash at all. At all. They don't think about managing their cash at all. These high-end guys, they manage their cash meticulously. And so they will, have that much of a buffer, but they know what they're going to lose, and they also know that when their setup comes up, they can make that back very easily. So I hope that helps.
Okay.
And it was a good question, Bill.
Yeah, great question, Bill. The size of their trades already increases with a constant risk, say 3%, as their account grows. How do you know this? Because you read it in a book somewhere? Or because you sat beside a guy that traded that money? Or you yourself traded that money? See, to say that you know something because it's in a book or on the internet or any other such thing, that's one of the things that makes trading unique. You know, when you fly an airplane, you have to do certain things or bad things will happen. In trading, you have to do certain things or bad things will happen. However, when you're trading and you're trading your own account, those bad things happen to you and to your account. And so different people trade different ways. Now, Jonathan, let's go to you, and you talked about, you know, 5 to 8 ticks. That's what you're looking for on a trade, and that I believe because you're trading multiple contracts that you scale out of that trade. What sort of a risk are you willing to, or what sort of a risk do you work with? Not a theoretical, not a from the book, not what, you know, what you've read people do, but what do you do?
Sure, I start with a basic entry because when I enter, I want everything in there so that I'm not doing something. So I start with basic stop loss parameters for each type of contract that I trade, and then I adjust them based on the dynamic in what I'm trading. As you know, I'm somewhat of an Excel freak, meaning I like to track and look at everything. So what I have for myself is I have a little spreadsheet on the side that I have in my account size. I have in, because I'm generally parking or looking at areas to get in beforehand, I know what it is. It tells me then either how many contracts I can trade or what type of stop I can trade based on the actual trade itself. So looking at a trade, so for example, if I was going short at what is now a value high or what other folks would be looking at as the high of the day there at 65.75, I would have my account size. It would tell me then if my stop there is going to be 5 ticks, how many contracts I can trade with it, then I can decide whether I want to get in there or not. But for each contract, so for example, my stop loss is much larger when I'm trading gold or oil than it is with something else like the ESs, just because of the movement and the type of action that the trading gets. Now the ESs are much smoother, the ability to trade back and forth is much higher, so my stop loss on the ESs is much less. But I would concur or want to back up what Robin is saying, that I think that sometimes traders, and this is from my own personal opinion, having sat there and traded everything from one contract to 50 and more at any given time, is that traders get very myopic about individual trades and a risk reward and things there, as opposed to managing their cash or their portfolio, which would be their cash amount. So I really do take a look at it in that fashion. I do have an amount that I wouldn't risk more than on any given trade, and that's how I set it up. But each market starts with a bracketed trade just so that everything is there. I don't have anything that's ambiguous when I start.
Would you, on the ES, would you risk more than 8 ticks in pursuit of 8 ticks? Does that fall within your trading plan?
Sure, I can, meaning it's based, if that were the case and I wanted to trade that based on my account size, I might have to reduce the number of contracts I traded on that trade because my risk went up. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
that's where your spreadsheet that you're working with comes in.
Sure. So, for example, let's say I want to take a 64 long, which is the value area from yesterday and also some point of control from today. But that trade then, in my mind, requires me to honor an area that's down at 61.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to take that trade because we now have an upside bias. We can go to 67.5. I would then look at that and say, okay, instead of taking a normal 4 or 6 lot, I may have to only trade 2 on this trade. Then I can decide whether or not I want to take that trade. I hope that makes sense.
It does. Does anyone have any questions on what I do understand what you just said? If there's anyone who has any questions on that, I do want to throw in these two comments that just came in. Don says, I don't get to listen every day, maybe only 2 to 3 days a week, but this session today is the best, most informative in weeks. I'm in Virginia where power was out for 5 days and 100 degrees of heat. It's not the dry heat of Nevada and Arizona. So thank you very much for the kind comment there, Don. Bruce says, excellent analogy on the flying thing. Flying a plane by instrument only versus visual flight rules, trading should be 95% instrument and 5% visual. And Walter says, I hear market profile talk there. Smile. And Skip says, a great analysis from Jonathan and Robin both. So,
now, I just wanted, for everyone who's watching, I mean, if you're just listening, then you just have to go by what Jonathan just said. But I was going to do a little visual of what he was saying. He was saying that if he was going to buy right here, his risk would have to be all the way down here to 61. All right, so we would have to have 3 points risk on the trade. Now, with 3 points risk, he would only trade a couple of contracts. With 2 points risk, he might trade, you know, three or four contracts. That's basically what he was saying. Because of the areas that he respects, that he has because of his system and what he's using, the larger the risk, the fewer the number of contracts. That's basically what it comes down to. Is that right?
Yes, that's why you're here. You said in two sentences what I said in 27. Yeah, the idea, exactly right. The idea is that for me, managing my portfolio or my cash is more important than an individual risk reward relationship on any given trade.
Okay. Thanks.
You are 100% correct. That's why you do what you do and I do what I do.
Now, you mentioned trading some things, Jonathan, other than just the ES. You mentioned trading gold. You mentioned trading crude. What, on any given day, do you come into the day deciding, today I'm going to trade this particular market? Or are you looking at all of the markets and then deciding which one is giving you the setup that you are most interested in?
Yeah, that's probably something that I learned over the years, or I embraced over the years, is that I found that when I was watching one market and one market only, and I certainly understand why people do that. It allows you to be focused and learn and be in control of what you're doing. But for me, over a period of time, what following multiple markets allowed me to do is take only those trades that I truly wanted to engage in. Meaning there are certain trades that I want to engage in more than others. Going back to Mark Douglas's book where he says, you know, find your advantage and trade it indiscriminately. So those trades which I believe give me the advantage, and to tout Robin saying that it's a number one trade where I exactly know where my entry is, I understand my risk, I understand my targets. So at least then I'm less emotional in control of the activity. I find it easier if I'm looking at multiple markets to be able to have those trades. There's less frustration if you're waiting and looking for something to come up and you don't necessarily may find the right patience. It may not be for everybody, but for me, yes, I find that way. So I don't have a particular market I'm going to trade in any given day. I trade the ones that set up the way and with the type of trades that I want to take, and then I take that trade in that particular market.
Okay. Robin, any comments on that?
She had to take a phone call.
She's on the phone? Okay.
Yeah, she may still be out.
Yeah, I think it might be akin to when Michael is looking at the ES and it's in a zone or an area where he doesn't want to trade, and he switches over and takes a look at oil or gold or something else because it's in a place or behaving in the way that he likes, and he'll trade that. I think, in essence, it's the same thought process.
Yes. There's almost always a market somewhere that's tradable. And if you have a system that works across markets like ours does, and you know, like the system that Jonathan is using does, then it's not, you know, just sitting there and not taking a trade because the one market that you're interested in is not providing a trade. You know, I would suggest just looking at a different market that does have some volatility or some movement, then you can take the trade there. I wouldn't suggest forcing a trade on the market that's not moving, you know. And that's a problem that I had a long time ago. I used to, you know, if the market wasn't moving, I'd try to, you know, sort of see things that weren't really there, giving me a reason to take the trade.
Yeah, focus is a good thing, but if you become overly focused on, you develop tunnel vision and you start to see things that maybe really aren't there.
Right. Right. And there we go up to 67, anyway, Jonathan.
Yep, this thing just
the high of the day right there.
Just a slow drift higher.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
So yep. Did you close your trade?
I did close mine. I don't know if Jonathan did. I did. I took the break even just as I had planned. I had, you know, once
I think Jonathan's done trading for the day.
Yeah, I was fortunate today and was done pretty early. So I'm at my business with a flipped open laptop.
Good.
And what would you say? What would you say over the 7 years is the biggest thing that you've learned that has kept you safe in your profitability?
I think the idea is separating the idea that entering a trade that doesn't work out is some kind of statement on you personally of whether you're right or wrong, a good trader or a bad trader.
Nice.
I think that probably would be the number one thing, being able to separate that emotion of being wrong or right with the ultimate outcome of a trade.
Yeah, that's excellent. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I usually cover is that there's no setup that works 100% of the time, or we'd all be trading it, not one. And so there is, you know, a good setup to me is 85% it will work. And you always have that 15% that it won't work. So your trade could be falling into that parameter. I mean, I know that there's been times where, you know, Michael's taken a trade, it's the right setup, and it just didn't work. And that's okay. And the fact that you mentioned the wrong versus being right, that means that you've let go of your ego, and that's excellent. So no, if you are looking at wrong and right, then your ego's attached to it. So all those are good.
There, I just took another trade in the crude there. I don't know if you guys all watched me do that, but in that particular trade, again, I just try to do the same thing over and over and over again. And that's, you know, I think.
How much do you risk in the crude?
Eight
that
ticks.
One I don't know the answer to. Eight ticks?
Eight ticks, yeah. I risk pretty much eight ticks everywhere, except for around the YM. I could just make the YM eight ticks, but I've been using seven ticks for so long. I just, you know, I probably should just make it eight. But
And what's the tick value in crude?
It's $10 per tick on this contract. They do have a mini crude that's $5 per tick, but I prefer to just trade this one. You know, the volume's light enough in this. But yeah, in this particular case, the setup is, you know, you get the bullish divergence right here, down here on the bottom. You get your bullish cross. You wait for price to come back here and test the BBC. It's looking for an area of support. You wait for it to close back in the direction of the divergence. You get in right there. And I had a 16-tick profit target on it. But once it moved up, I think I was plus 10 ticks. I moved my stop up to plus 8, I think, and on that last one, just to lock in some profit. I was trailing it behind the MA1 here until it moved up to there, and then I just put it right up above the MA1, and it came back and got me out with plus 8 ticks is what I got on that.
That's called getting stopped out with a profit.
Yes.
Jonathan, what would you say was your biggest obstacle to overcome in your trading journey?
I think it might have been outside of the normal things, you know, losing money and negative feedback that you would beat up yourself on. I think the ultimate thing was always thinking that there was something better and there was something else that I should be searching and looking for. I think that made me double-minded and unable to be consistent, focused, and do things that you need to do to become a successful trader.
And so, what you're saying is that I think everyone has experienced that to some degree. In fact, everyone has. That there's just over the hill, just around the corner, is that one perfect time frame, that one holy grail indicator that will unlock the mysteries of the markets and just make it all a cakewalk from that point forward. Is that kind of what you're referring to?
I would agree. I think it tends to put you in that position of being double-minded and unable to be successful.
Because you work on something, you work on something, you work on something. I've known people to work on something for years. And then they, whether it's a couple days or a couple years, I mean, they put it into motion, and maybe it does okay for a bit, but then as soon as there's a drawdown or a couple of, you know, trades that aren't profitable in a row, back to back, a losing streak, some would call it, I guess, they quickly become discouraged and realize that, oh, I thought I had the Holy Grail, but I don't. So now I have to go back to the drawing board. I have to go back to the hunt. I have to go back to Googling till my fingers bleed, because that thing is out there, and I will hunt it down, and I will own it. And so much time, so much energy, and so much money gets spent on the chase. And Mark Douglas in his book talks, you know, about that part of it, not, you know, that's really not the biggest part of the equation. Anything that gives you a definable edge in the market is tradable once you're able to manage yourself, your own emotions, and all the other things, the whole psychology, all the stuff that Robin teaches, the psychology of trading. Do you agree with that, Robin?
Yes, absolutely.
If I could just chime in a second, I hate interrupting, but I would have to 100% say that the psychology of trading and what happens in between your ears is so much bigger of a fact. I'm not saying this correctly, but so much of the part and parcel of being successful that I wouldn't want anybody that's entering into this or in their nescient period of trading to ignore that and think that that doesn't have value and to spend all their time looking for that perfect indicator, you know, learning a system or otherwise. That the earlier that you can capture and master the psychological part of training and be able to embrace the idea of what Robin talks about and those parts of it, the faster the track to success will be.
That's really the last thing that you just said, the faster to your success. You know, when you have these things going on in your head, it actually inhibits your ability to learn quickly. And so it takes longer time because you're dealing with the emotional stuff and trying to maneuver that. When that's out of the way, your mind is absorbing like a sponge, and you really do move faster, you know, when you get that. It's phenomenal when I see people, you know, that have been trading for 10 years, they finally come to me and they go, you know, I got to get this, and I know it's now the psychology. It takes them 10 years to figure it out. And so they come to me, and then within, you know, 3-4 sessions, they're cooking. And it's because that's out of the way. And they say, oh, if I had done this sooner, you know, I would have been so much farther along than I am right now because I've just been so stuck. So it doesn't get better, the psychology, and it is the number one reason that traders fail. Because it builds up and builds up like a snowball over time to the point that the stress is so bad that somebody will leave the game. So, you know, I totally agree. And it's hard to tell somebody that, you know, when they go in and they have a win early on and they do really well and, they think they've got it, they don't realize the repercussions of time, losing being right, being wrong, success and failure, winning and losing, all that, you know, from your past is now going to come up, and it's going to affect your trading.
Well said. Is anyone else in the audience that has any questions on anything? Any questions for Robin? Any questions for Jonathan or Michael? We're closing in on a couple hours here, but if there's any questions out there, I would love to be able to answer them. Jonathan, to those who are just getting started with their trading, or those who've been at it for a while and are frustrated, I mean, if you could dispense, you know, one particular piece of advice, what would that be?
One, huh?
Well, you can have two or three
one.
If you want.
Just one. Gosh, such pressure. I don't even feel that pressure, that much pressure when I'm taking a trade. I feel so much pressure. I would say have a plan and a purpose. I think that the one thing that I provides something outside of yourself and doesn't get you into a position where you are vested in the wrong way is to have a plan and a purpose. And I think that's what CFRN provides for folks. The idea that the trading isn't just the trade, any single one trade, any single one day, that it's part and parcel of something that is bigger and important to a level that hopefully you aren't tied up with the goods or bads of any one day or any one trade. I mean, obviously we're all in this to make money and to be profitable, otherwise you won't be able to do it forever. But if that individual event or that individual day is paramount, I think that you ultimately will have problems both psychologically and technically and find yourself falling to the wayside as most traders do. But if you embrace something different than that you have an opportunity to do greater and better than what you could do by yourself. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah,
how about you, Robin?
And I'd like to mention that, you know, again, of all the places that I've you know, done work with, and I've done work with many, 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 many trading rooms, I am so impressed with the way Dwayne and Michael handle the room, and certainly David and Mike when he comes in here. There's such great information, far more superior than any of the sites that I've seen, and I know that there's some joking around and that there's some playing, but you know, trading it needs that kind of stuff too. And I think the way that they have this format and the way that they focus on the morning the way they do, and then the recaps are really so fabulous. You know, if you're thinking of getting involved, it's one of the best that I've seen. It is one of the best I've seen. I'm very, very honored to be part of the group, and very privileged to be around such meticulous traders. And thank you.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. We do work hard to try to, I don't know, do the right thing. You know, why? Because it's right. And by the right thing, I don't mean that we're always right. I just mean do unto others as you would have them do unto you, kind of a thing. The market is continuing to kind of press to the upside. Jonathan, what was the number you had overhead that you thought the market was going to, 67?
67.50.
67.50, and the high so far is it 67.50?
75, I think.
Yep, 67.75. Yeah, that's correct.
And that's just a level we're going to. I mean, right now I think we could press up to the 70.5 area, but if I remember correctly from my numbers that I had this morning, but I know that the 67.50 was embedded in my head as a as basically what I call a teeter-totter, meaning below that I had somewhat of a short bias, and above this area I have somewhat of a long bias.
Okay. All right. Well, going into yesterday, because there was trading Tuesday night on Globex and yesterday morning before they halted the market to observe 4th of July, and then it opened right back up yesterday afternoon, so it wasn't that much of a holiday. The trading was thin. I had looked for... well, let me just pull up my little chart thingy here. Oh, let me see what day I put that out there. One moment. Michael, you're taking off? Is that the deal?
Yeah, I'm going to have to take off.
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up here, too, in a minute, because I don't want to wear these guys out. They've been very kind, shared some really good information with us.
Yeah.
Okay, the 4th of July at 1:12 a.m. Pacific time, we had a tweet that said, consider selling 1374 on a limit. And I don't know if you have, do you have an hourly chart handy, Michael? I can switch it over to mine if you don't. Or are you already gone? Michael? I guess he's already gone. Okay.
Michael has left the building.
He has left the building. All right, I'll put it back on my chart. He kept saying he had to go, but I kept saying, well, hang on just another minute. So he really did have to go. So the tweet went out, and you guys, you can, if you, you can follow us, twitter.com/CFRN, or as you're supposed to say it, we are at CFRN on Twitter. But the tweet went out here, consider selling 1374 limit. That went out Wednesday night, 1:12 a.m., or Wednesday, yeah, the 4th of July. No, because that was Wednesday, 1:12 a.m. So we hit this 1374 up here. Okay, so here, this is when that tweet came out. It was way back over here on July the 4th at 1, except it was 1:24 Pacific time. So it was more back in this area right here. Somewhere in here. And so then as the day progressed, I thought, well, that was one that just didn't get triggered. But, and I'm pointing this out not to say, hey, look, I got a tweet right, because that's not my point at all. You're welcome to wander through the tweet feed at any time, and you know, we've done okay. but that trade, that 1374 trade, if you had that trade on this morning, you had a point of drawdown, and it dropped all the way down to 57. So I don't have Michael here to do the math anymore, but that's a few points. 18. Yeah, about an 18-point drop. So if anyone was following the Twitter feed and you were able to take advantage of that, congratulations. Congratulations. That worked out really well. Okay, guys, any parting comments? Anything else you want to add, toss in, throw in?
No, other than I've put on my calendar to take a vacation this week next year.
Yeah, yeah.
Good deal.
With the low volume and the action this week, it's I'm gonna take a vacation next year.
Well, next year it'll fall on Thursday, correct?
Yeah, right.
So and maybe then, Monday, I don't know. It's, yeah. It's still, once we get it down to Friday, then we'll still have a good week, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then everybody will be gone Thursday and Friday.
I have my three quotes I'm going to give you for the day, if I may.
Absolutely.
Okay. This one, and I don't think I said this. You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look at fear in the face. Eleanor Roosevelt. Next one. When you get into a tight place and everything seems to go against you, till it seems as though you could not hang on a minute longer. Never give up, for that is just the place and time that the tide will turn. Harriet Beecher Stowe. And the last one, now go ahead, reach for the stars. And there's no, that's from nobody.
And the whole thing is go ahead, reach for the stars?
Right.
Well, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, listen, Jonathan, I've been wanting to bring you on for a while, and I'm glad you were available today. And, guys, we're going to be looking forward to doing some kind of something with Jonathan here in the near future. We haven't kind of figured it out yet, but he really enjoys teaching. He enjoys working with traders and training, and he is a fan of the markets, and he's really a fan of people. He loves to help people, and I've seen him in that capacity in the past, and he truly excels at that because he truly does care, as I know that Robin truly does care about you too. And so be sure and visit her website, robindane.com. I'll even
yep, and a quick thing, I have a couple of webinars coming up. One is with on the 17th, and that's I think it's being posted right now. And another one is with Michael through Daniel Trading. So that's on the 23rd. So we've got some webinars coming up. They're free, and I think you'll like it. Dwayne, I may send you some copies if you want to send that out or do something there. And then
absolutely, yeah, I'll put it on the blog.
I think and then aren't you coming to Vegas in July sometime? Didn't you say that?
No.
Dwayne?
No, I'm not.
When's the next time you're doing a workshop? Or?
We are working on putting together our first workshop right now. We're trying to We're trying to get it planned. We had thought about doing it in Vegas and thought about doing it in July, but it's definitely not going to be in July. And I'm thinking it's not going to be in Vegas. However, we'd still love you to come. So,
I will absolutely be there.
Okay. So we'll try
no
to
matter
out,
where it is.
We'll try to figure out how to make all that work. Instead of showgirls and penny slots, I think we're going to go for more of a quiet retreat. On the water.
Let's do a cruise.
Kind of a
how about a cruise?
Yeah. My cruise ship's in the shop. So along with my Rolex, so yeah.
And it was great to have Jonathan on. That was fabulous.
Yeah, it really was, Jonathan. Really was great. And let's get together and do some coffee or do some lunch in the next week or two, and let's chart our futures.
Looking forward to it. Thank you. I appreciate it. Robin, it was a pleasure.
Yes, me too, Jonathan.
Thanks so much, guys. A lot of positive comments from the audience. Everybody enjoyed it. So we'll have you both back again real soon. Robin, we'll, in fact, we're going to be here tomorrow. And so if you guys are available, you want to pop in tomorrow, there'll be a lot of activity early on because of the employment numbers. After that, it will probably get very quiet. So the radio broadcast tomorrow will probably be quite brief as we breeze through the recap, and there won't be much other news. I think most people will be continuing their 4th of July holiday. But if you guys want to pop in for a chat, by all means, log in, and I'll see you there, and we'll chat then.
Perfect.
All right.
Have a fabulous day, everybody.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for tuning in, whoever you are, wherever you are. May God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.